70 this morning in Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm so happy to welcome back into our studios Kaylin Palomares, who now works for Racine County, formerly of Hawthorne Hollow. And Kaylin joins us once a month, helping to organize a program that will feature some aspect of the natural world around us or environmental or ecological issues that all of us should be thinking about. She's done a terrific job over the last several months in terms of arranging for some really interesting guests, and I have a feeling this is going to be maybe the most interesting conversation yet, because we're going to be talking about a beautiful place that I have a feeling some of you have not yet had the chance to experience for yourselves, a gorgeous national wildlife refuge that is just south of the border, and actually north of the border too, because it's Illinois and Wisconsin both. We're talking about the Hackmatack National Wildlife Refuge, which is in McHenry County, Illinois, and Walworth County, Wisconsin. And we're going to be talking about that with two special guests that Kaylin has brought along with her today. We'll introduce them in just a moment. Kaylin Palomares, first of all, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg. Good morning.
Good to have you here. So tell us a little bit about the genesis of this idea to bring our two guests, Steve Byers and Vince Mosca, to the program today.
Sure. Well, to be totally honest, I've never met these guys until today. But our friend that we all know and love, Dave Giordano, he reached out to me and said, Vince is a really cool guy, and I told him about the radio show, and he'd love to be on, and I emailed him because my first guest fell through, and Vince is like, yep, I'm there.
Wow.
So it was very, it kind of worked out really well, and I've been wanting to bring on kind of a larger scale guest for like a national situation, because I feel like that's a lot of times when people think about nature, they think of their national parks and their national forests. And so I think that this fits along really well with kind of the general idea of nature for people.
Absolutely. Well, and this is a national wildlife refuge that's right down the road. And for some of our listeners, it's probably on their same block, actually. And actually, now that we nicely broadcast all the way into Walworth County, it's actually works out really, really mm-hmm. beautifully that we are talking about Hackmatack National Wildlife Refuge. I have to confess to having never been there. Have you had a chance to see it for yourself?
I have not been there, no.
All right. So we're going to be learning a lot from these two gentlemen whom you have invited. So first of all, Steve Byers is chair of Friends of Hackmatack National Wildlife Refuge. And he was saying before we went on the air that he actually had a bit of a hand in the creation of this, he and others who wanted to see this. And it was ultimately created back in 2012, if I understand correctly, by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So we will be talking to Steve, and we're also going to be talking today with Vince Mosca, who is Vice President and Senior Principal Ecologist for Hayes and Associates, a group which does wetland and ecological assessment projects. And they are involved in what amounts to a restoration project for at least some of the acreage of Hackmatack National Wildlife Refuge. And so we're going to be talking about what that kind of project entails and what his responsibilities are, and what this is likely to look like once that restoration work is done. We appreciate you coming in bright and early on this Thursday morning to join us. Steve Byers and Vince Mosca, we welcome both of you to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. Steve Byers, as I indicated, you have been a part of this pretty much from the start. So I think it would be interesting if we could get a little idea from you of just how this National Wildlife Refuge got started. Whose crazy idea was that?
Well, actually, it was an interesting project, an interesting idea, and actually the idea of establishing a National Wildlife Refuge was really little more than a dream for many years. A number of concerned citizens, much like Kaylin and Vince here, were concerned about the loss of wildlife habitat. We were concerned about ongoing development that seemed to be unbridled and unplanned. We felt that if we could bring a National Wildlife Refuge to the area, it would generate interest and support for protection and stewardship of our oak savannas and our prairies and our surviving wetlands and so forth. For 10 years, a group of us sat around kitchen tables, sat on bar stools and talked about the idea of bringing a National Wildlife Refuge to the region. So we worked for about 10 years, and we worked with the Fish and Wildlife Service to establish that. One of the highlights, I think, of that planning effort was realized when we had two public meetings, one in Illinois and one in Wisconsin, where we brought in the public was invited to come in and comment about a refuge and what it would bring to the region and what it would mean. And we had probably 95% support for the refuge from the people that attended those public hearings. So it was an all-out effort, I think, for our fledgling friends group to talk about the refuge, why it was significant, and then to let people be a part of that dream.
Wonderful. So when you're thinking about something like this and about the different possibilities of what could be done with a particular tract of land, what do we mean when we're talking about a wildlife refuge, apart from, you know, kind of the obvious? But, I mean, what does that designation represent? I suspect that at the outset, maybe even some of you didn't even exactly know what that actually meant.
Well, that's true. A National Wildlife Refuge is part of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service refuge system. These are lands that are protected primarily for the fish and wildlife that survive on them and the habitats upon which they are dependent. Wildlife refuges do provide recreational opportunities, the traditional hunting and fishing opportunities, but also in this part of Wisconsin and Illinois, there are just as many people interested in hiking, bird watching, just getting out to enjoy what these natural areas bring, and they enrich their lives in so many different ways.
Because I think sometimes when we hear that term, what we sort of imagine is that, unlike, for instance, a national park or a state park where people come in and do all kinds of different things, a wildlife refuge, the name suggests, is primarily meant to safeguard the creatures that live there. And so, I wouldn't have been surprised if you'd said, you know, this is a place where you don't hike or where you don't hunt. But it sounds like
refuges do provide those opportunities for the public. And in fact, when we looked at some of the documents here in Wisconsin, in southeastern Wisconsin, there was a demonstrated need for additional open spaces for traditional hunting and fishing, outdoor recreational opportunities. So refuges provide those opportunities for the public to be engaged and to use these lands. These are lands that are owned by the public.
So are those kind of activities very carefully limited?
I would say that there's some guidance there. There's traditional hunting and fishing. People that engage in those activities have to follow the regular hunting regulations promulgated by either the Wisconsin DNR or the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. And typically, the areas are open to the public to walk through in any way. I will add that the refuge, Hakmatak National Wildlife Refuge, was established to provide habitat for grassland birds and wetland birds that are neotropical migrants. They migrate out of the Midwest into Central and South America during the wintertime and then return. And so these are species that have that have suffered significant population declines as habitat has been converted for other uses. So there may be situations where there are perhaps sandhill cranes nesting or black-crowned night herons or some kind of a species that would be sensitive to disturbance that we would ask people not to walk in. And those areas would be posted by the refuge manager.
Hmm. So what land exactly are we talking about? And as you had these conversations, were you very specific in terms of it would be nice if this tract of land was set aside? And what's particularly intriguing, of course, about this National Wildlife Refuge is that it involves both McHenry, Illinois County, and Walworth County in Wisconsin. And it's not actually all that often that we see that kind of cooperation across state lines. I mean, deer and birds and so on, they don't care about state lines, but a lot of people do. What got you thinking about this specific area of land?
Well, I would say that it's because of the surviving oak savannas that can't be replaced in your children's 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 lifetime, surviving prairies and then also surviving wetlands. And so the Fish and Wildlife Service worked with the Friends and many other of our partners to establish a preserve design that calls for ultimately protection of about 11,000 acres of land that would augment lands that are already owned by the Wisconsin DNR, Peterkin Pond, or otherwise already owned by the McHenry County Conservation District or the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. So the refuge and the lands that are envisioned to be protected will build upon other lands that have been acquired by our partners. So it's a big partnership effort. And the preserve design calls for protection of four large core areas that are large enough to support species of wildlife that are sensitive to size. For example, grassland birds need 200 or 300 acres of land for them to have stable and stable populations. And so the four core areas then are augmented by corridors that connect those four core areas. So the concept for this refuge, some people refer to it as a donut, but actually it's a core and corridors where there are four core areas that are large enough to support area-sensitive wildlife, and then corridors along both the North Branch and the South Branch of Nipissing Creek. And this allows for connections and allows for wildlife and even plant species to move along those corridors, and in the case of local extinctions, can repopulate those areas. And this is also shows resilience, or will demonstrate resilience to threats caused by changes in climate and other threats to wildlife species.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the backbone of the refuge is Nipissing Creek. So when you look at the design of the refuge, there's multiple tributaries of the Nipissing Creek, which then there's some of the highest quality freshwater mussel populations in northern Illinois are in the Nipissing. So the McHenry County Conservation District had owned a lot of holdings on Nipissing Creek and had done some wonderful large-scale restorations on it. So it was just a logical extension because Nipissing Creek also starts in Illinois and Wisconsin. Mm. There's several, like Pell Lake and Twin Lakes become the Nipissing Creek in Illinois. Okay. And so when you look at the design of the corridor, it's loosely based on the skeleton of Nipissing Creek drainages as it heads to the chain of lakes.
Right. Very good. So there are a lot of ways to set aside land so you don't build a Burger King on it. I'm always beating up on Burger King, but that's just the way it trips out of my mouth. I mean, there are a lot of ways to set aside land so you don't build Burger Kings and lots of other things on it, so it does not get developed. What is it about a National Wildlife Refuge that sets this land aside in any sort of special way? I mean, is this, what does this designation represent versus, for instance, some of the other things that you were mentioning that this sort of attaches to? Is this sort of a protection at a higher level, for instance?
Well, it does bring the federal government to play in the effort to engage in land protection, and the Fish and Wildlife Service have different funds available, migratory bird monies that are available to acquire land. And I need to mention to your listeners that the Fish and Wildlife Service only acquires land from willing sellers, and then also it's targeted. They want to complete protection of the boundaries of the refuge as has been described in several planning documents. And then there are opportunities to work with landowners through conservation easements. For example, the Fish and Wildlife Service would work with landowners to keep land in crop production or in pasture for cattle or for any other reason. So the Fish and Wildlife Service really looks forward to working with landowners to maintain the rural character of the landscape as well.
Very good. For those of you just joining us, we are talking today about the Hackamatack National Wildlife Refuge, which is located both in McHenry County, Illinois, and Walworth County, Wisconsin. 11,000-some acres?
They will call for protection of about 11,000 acres, and to date, about 3,000 acres have been protected.
So this is still in kind of a growing phase.
Oh, this is a work in progress.
Exciting.
Greg, one of your grandchildren could be a refuge manager someday.
Ah, very good. So, by the way, I don't think we've mentioned the name Hackamatack. Who wants to explain this Algonquin word and why this has that beautiful name?
It's the Algonquin word for tamarack, the tamarack tree, which is a kind of a unique, it's a very common tree up in northern Wisconsin, but there are some southern populations in the Hackamatack region. So that was chosen as kind of to anchor the refuge because of some of the unique features that used to occur down here. There's a few remnants within the refuge, but not many.
Okay.
And I would just add to that sometimes people get caught up in pronouncing Hackamatack, but let me just tell your listeners that it rhymes with Big Mac Attack.
Oh, great. Very good. So that's enough fast food talk for today. But yes, very good. Very good. So our guests, Kaylin Palomares is with us, and she's brought with her Steve Byers, who is chair of the Friends of Hackamatack National Wildlife Refuge. And then Vince Mosca, who we've already heard from as well, vice president and senior principal ecologist for Hayes and Associates. And they have been engaged to do restoration work for the Hackamatack National Wildlife Refuge. Vince, let's learn a little bit more about Hayes and Associates and the nature of the kind of work that you and your colleagues do.
Yeah, we're a sort of a boutique environmental consulting firm. We do all things water, natural water. We don't do potable water, but we do stormwater management, floodplain modeling, ecological restoration, landscape architecture, prioritizing native landscapes. We have about 33 employees based in Wisconsin and Illinois. And I head up our ecological services department, and I've been there for 35 years.
Wow. So have you been involved in anything right here, for instance, in the Kenosha Racine area?
We have several projects with Root Pike Wind and Dave Giordano, including Gitzloff Park. And we've done several other things with them through the years and really enjoy the partnership with those guys. And they're really a powerhouse for raising money and doing a lot of projects. For a small organization, they really get a lot done, and it's really, really impressive. And it's really a gem for the community.
Great. So tell us about the initial overture that you received from the folks at Hackamatack National Wildlife Refuge. I mean, at what point did you become involved, and what exactly was the nature of the invitation given to you?
The network of the instigators of Hackamatack, say probably 15 years ago, I was asked. I've known Steve for a long time. We've done restoration projects together, fen restorations and some other things, and Ed Collins and Nancy Williamson and Cindy Screwcrude, some of the original folks. I've known them for a long time professionally. Hmm. And I live in Kenosha County. And so I think it was Steve personally reached out to me and said, hey, would you be interested in helping us get the wildlife refuge off, you know, sort of bring Wisconsin in as a, you know, as a partner and to help anchor that down. And so I was there, not in the beginning, but I was there when the Fish and Wildlife Service came for their first field trip out here to help explain what was there and to be sort of a technical advisor from on the Wisconsin side. And then ultimately when we got approved as a refuge and the board formed, then I joined as a member probably 8 or 9 years ago.
Very good. So explain what that approval process is like. I mean, what are they looking at? Are they looking at the land, or are they looking at you, or looking at your plans? Maybe all or none. I mean, what's involved in receiving that approval and or designation?
Well, it's about a 10-year process. There are, I think, 11 or 12 different steps in designating a piece of land as a National Wildlife Refuge. First of all, you have to have the biological resources, the oak savannas, the wetlands, the surviving prairies. That's a key part of it. But then also the Fish and Wildlife Service is very astute. They look at whether there's public support for a refuge. And I have to tell you that building the biological case for a refuge was the easy part. I didn't know there were quite so many garden clubs in northeastern Illinois, but I think we spoke to each and every one of them about Hackmatack National Wildlife Refuge and why it was important and why it would add benefit. And then the other part of this was going to the local communities that I think, in at least in the past, had envisioned their communities as perhaps a location for big box stores, but we were always suggesting an alternative that would include a National Wildlife Refuge and a more sustainable future for their communities. And they're called gateway communities because they are literally communities that serve as gateways to important natural resources. And so building a refuge is a complicated process, and the Fish and Wildlife Service has their own process that we learned about and followed as well. That included those public hearings that I mentioned to you earlier. But then they have a lot of resource professionals that look at the landscape as well, and then they come back with a proposed plan for the refuge that that the public, in this case, in both Wisconsin and Illinois, endorsed.
I believe that the original footprint of the for consideration of the refuge was about 25,000 acres.
Right.
And then it got winnowed down to what we have now because of, there was some concern. Some of the local landowners, farmers, weren't interested, you know, sort of legacy farms, family farms that weren't really interested in being part of the refuge, even though there wouldn't have been any obligation on their part. So we kind of put it all together, sort of a little mini eco-region surrounding Nipissing Creek, and then it became what it is today.
Was there, at the outset, money involved? I mean, did somebody have to be paid for this process to sort
of... Well, you are a dreamer, Greg. the Friends of Hackmatack, we are an all-volunteer board, and we've not received any money to support our activities. I will tell you that one of the things that I'm most proud of, actually, as part of Friends of Hackmatack, are the partners that have engaged with the Friends of Hackmatack in building the refuge. And I'm just going to read a few of them. They include Ducks Unlimited, which your listeners will recognize, the Kettle Moray Land Trust in Wisconsin, Geneva Lake Conservancy in Wisconsin, and then also others include the Nipissing Watershed Association, Open Lands, Illinois Audubon, and of course the Fish and Wildlife Service, McHenry County Conservation District. So this wouldn't work without a partnership that is engaged. And as I mentioned earlier, our partners have worked to acquire now about 3,000 acres of land, which it's a work in progress, as you mentioned earlier, in establishing the refuge. But you need to take that first step.
Sure. So the goal is ultimately 11,000 acres.
That's what the Fish and Wildlife Service planning documents call for, yes.
So what has to happen between now and when you reach that? I mean, what does the process look like to get to 11,000 acres?
Well, first of all, you need some financial resources. Let me tell you that our partners that I just mentioned have been very active, and they can move more quickly than the federal government and the Fish and Wildlife Service. They will, if there's a piece of property that has biological features and there's a willing landowner that's willing to sell the land, then one of our partners can step up and acquire the land and hold it until the Fish and Wildlife Service has funds budgeted for taking that property out. And so that's exactly what's happened. Some of our partners, the Conservation Fund, Open Lands, and Illinois Audubon, with support from a number of other organizations and individuals, recently closed on a 955-acre parcel, which is huge, and ultimately that will be conveyed to the Fish and Wildlife Service as they budget for and have money for that acquisition.
So you are still in the business of acquiring land. I mean, that process is ongoing.
Absolutely.
And that's funding driven. The parcel that Steve just mentioned was just a strategic piece that connected Glacial Park, McHenry County Conservation District land, all the way to the state line in Wisconsin. So there's a couple roads and railroads in the middle, but it actually connects it all the way from the state line all the way down into Glacial Park, which is wonderful.
Very good. We're talking today about the Hackmatack National Wildlife Refuge, located in McHenry County, Illinois, and Walworth County, Wisconsin. Ultimately, about 11,000 acres will comprise this wildlife refuge. And we're talking today with the invitation of Kaylin Palomares, with Steve Byers, who is chair of the Friends of Hackmatack, and then Vince Mosca, who has been a part of this effort for quite some time, but is also wearing a second hat as vice president and senior principal ecologist for Hayes and Associates. And they have been engaged to do restoration work for this National Wildlife Refuge. Am I framing that correctly?
Yeah, we're the technical folks putting the restoration plan together. There's some fairly standard restoration techniques that are out there, and McHenry County Conservation District have been doing them for many decades. But there's a parcel that is just south of Tryon Grove Road, in just outside of Richmond, and we're in the process of getting final permits to do full restoration. There's an agricultural drainage ditch on the site, which then dries out the property. So restoration of sites, and especially wetlands, really is the hydrology of the property. So some of the key things are filling in this ditch so that the water's at the surface rather than draining, breaking up all the agricultural drain tiles so that the farmers, you know, they had to drain the land to be able to farm it effectively. And so we have to reverse that process, tear out all the tiles, and then classic restoration is invasive species management. So buckthorn, reed canary grass, common reed, all of those things. So we're in a process then of, we've started some of the physical restoration work, and we're on the verge of getting all of our permits and to do some of the big work this fall and winter.
I have a feeling, Kaylin Palomares, a lot of this sounds familiar to you in terms of the work that you do. I mean, you've seen this with your own eyes, and this is kind of on your territory, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, starting with just the invasive species, I've got so much experience with that, lucky me. And there's always more invasive species work to be done anywhere. And then, as far as the agricultural areas being converted back into, you know, their natural, we do a lot of that as well through the county. And it's really hard work, and it's hard to undo what's been done over a long period of time. So I give you lots of props for that, because just the drain tile alone is a big feat. So
let's talk a little bit more about that. First of all, is this the kind of thing that any of us who are more city slickers would have ever even seen? I mean, is this something that's at all visible to the casual passerby, or is this largely invisible and yet important work that needs to be done?
No, it's all underground, essentially. I mean, the short version of the drainage history is that the farmers needed to create gravity to get the water off the property, so they would create agricultural ditches basically making a deeper spot in the field and drain that to somewhere else, and then they would install drain tiles that would come in sort of perpendicular to that ditch about 3 or 4 feet down below ground. In the old days, it was put in by hand, terracotta tiles laid end to end, and those would then drain into the ditch and then the ditch down to the creek. And so, you would never know they were there. It's kind of like your sanitary sewer in the city. You know, it just sort of works
right
24 hours a day, and you don't even know it's there.
Right. So it sounds like it wasn't much fun at the outset to do it. I mean, to put it in sounds like a lot of work. And so to take it out, it's appropriate that it's a lot of work.
Yeah. Probably easier to take out, honestly, with modern equipment than it would have been originally.
Right.
Because a lot of it would have been done by hand. They had some mechanical. They had special ditch diggers in the old days, you know, in the 1880s or something like that. But a lot of it was done by hand and a shovel.
Wow. So are we talking now about farms that are no longer farms? I mean, that farmland, but no longer being farmed. Is that, by and large, the kind of property we're talking
Oftentimes,
about?
Oftentimes, yes. Yeah. That goes from an active agricultural field to restoration.
So, in many cases, it's marginal land, too, where farmers don't always get a crop because it's too wet sometimes.
Ah.
But I wanted to build a little bit of what Kaylin said. The friends, in addition to the great project that we have working with the Hay and Associates for restoration of this 155 acres of wetlands, the Friends are also very much engaged in active volunteer stewardship. And so in 2022, the Friends actually received recognition from the Wisconsin Invasive Species Council for removing garlic mustard from a beautiful woodland located off of Highway H between Genoa City and Lake Geneva. And that's a site where your listeners could go visit. But also the Friends are involved in active management. We help with controlled burns. We're out conducting removal of invasive European buckthorns, Japanese honeysuckles. And in 2023, the Friends provided over 500 hours of volunteer time in support of the refuge. And for your listeners who are good at math, that's equivalent to about 3 months of work.
Wow.
So the Friends are very much engaged in volunteer stewardship and then also conservation outreach. And so maybe we can talk about that in a little bit. But
very good. Greg. Vince Mosca, can you explain then what Hayes and Associates is doing in relationship to what Steve Byers was just talking about? I mean, it sounds like in terms of their voluntary stewardship, that's sort of part of this big effort. What sort of effort are you and your associates specifically involved in? I mean, are you doing the same thing but on a much higher level?
Well, more sophisticated.
Well, in the modern world, you know, you need permits for just about everything related, not invasive species management, not necessarily, but any kind of land manipulation, filling of ditches. There's often floodplain involved, digging up the tiles. There's land disturbance, so erosion control, all those kinds. So we're providing the technical support and then putting the documents together that will go out to bid on the open market to get competitive bids to implement the work. So we have the funding through the federal government to do that work, but we need how many acres is that? 120?
About 155 acres will be restored.
155, so it's big. So it's bigger than volunteers could handle upfront. And so we have to go out to bid and to do the invasive species management and the earthwork.
And it will include some earth moving activities, installation of rock weirs, and the whole idea is to restore the hydrology, as Vince has mentioned.
Yeah, that's key.
We've mentioned wetlands once or twice in this conversation. Can you be more specific about how much of this refuge will or even at the present time involves wetlands?
I don't know if I have a good statistic, but I'd say probably over 50% of the land holdings will be wet. And we mentioned the Nipissing Creek corridors. So there's the riparian lands that are along the creek. But there are uplands and the savannas and prairies that go with the refuge. There's over 450 feet of elevation change in the refuge, which makes it really interesting landscape. And it also adds for biodiversity and climate change resiliency because of the glacial topography that supports the refuge.
Right. Let's talk for a moment about that whole matter of beyond the earth moving and all of that, the eradication of invasives, and then the nurturing of something that's much more native, which in a sense returns the landscape to something resembling what it resembled a long, long, long time ago. What is that process like? And then what kind of choices end up being made along the way?
Sort of as a baseline, when you're doing a restoration design, you're looking at the soils that you have, topography somewhat, but the soil types tell you what kind of native landscape would have been here 150 years ago. So as a part of the land restoration, then you get the invasive species under control, you get your all your grading work and weirs installed, and then do a little bit of soil preparation depending on what the conditions are. And then you primarily use native seed from local sources as best as possible, and then nurture those for the first couple of years. There's always a flush of weeds and that, but the soils, topography, original settlement mapping for those native landscapes guide the restoration. And then there's always soft edges, and you sort of overlap, and Mother Nature takes care of some of that.
So how much of that work is already underway in earnest?
We're about a third of the way on this project. We did some invasive species management. We have pretty rough winters lately, as far as not enough winter for, because some of these areas we're doing restoration, you'd like the ground to be hard, you know, with frost, and we just haven't had those kind of winters lately. So we got partway through some of the invasive species, the shrubs and small trees removal. And then some of the work will be maybe we've had a really wet year this year. So now, you know, we have the ongoing conditions like that. But when conditions are good, we'll be able to finish the invasive species. There'll be a bunch of large-scale herbiciding of some of the weeds that are there. And then the seeds will be installed probably this winter and probably next winter also.
Right. So what you're describing right now, when you said, well, we're about a third of the way done. So you're talking about a portion of this. I mean, you're talking about a very specific tract of land on which you're working, right?
Correct.
Because some of this isn't even part of the refuge yet. I mean, some of this land ultimately still needs to be acquired, but that's for another project for another day, it sounds like.
Yes.
Okay, very good.
Well, most of the restoration work, whether it's the project that Vince mentioned or the work being done by our volunteers, is land that has been pre-acquired by our conservation partners and ultimately will become part of the refuge. And I would add that the Friends have secured money from the Illinois Clean Energy Stewardship Challenge Grant, the Morton Arboretum, the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, for restoration and management work on some of other properties beyond what Vince is working on. Mm. So you can see it's a multi-pronged effort to get out there and to begin to do the restoration work.
Well, that's part of what makes it exciting, I guess. Yeah.
Well, it is exciting at times, yeah. Particularly when you're leading a controlled burn.
Right. So you were mentioning that also outreach and education is a big part of the work of the Friends of the ACMATAC. Tell us about some of those efforts.
Well, yeah, certainly, Greg. The Friends have been very much involved. We realized early on that we needed to bring people along with this idea of a refuge and begin to promote projects and ideas that support both the refuge and conservation of our wildlife. And so we are engaged in a number of different projects annually. In Search of Eagles, we do during the wintertime when eagles are concentrated along the Fox River. We're engaged in World Migratory Bird Day and And in the past, the Fish and Wildlife Service staff have come in and conducted bird banding activities. So it's delightful to see young children have an opportunity to hold a wild bird in their hand and let it go after it's been banded. But right now, we're actually gearing up for one of our biggest events. I could call it the Monarch Family Fun Fair, but it's, I think it's the Monarch Mania Family Fun Fair, because we have about 700 people come through in about 3 hours to talk about monarchs, pollinators, and the importance of milkweeds and native plants to these interesting butterflies. And so we have a coalition of about 16 different organizations that are actually, your listeners are welcome to attend. It's at Main Beach in Crystal Lake this coming Sunday, August 11th from 12:30 to 4. And they'll have an opportunity to learn more about monarchs, perhaps more than they ever knew. They'll be given a quiz. It's in both Spanish and English. But don't worry, everybody passes. And and in return for completing the quiz, they'll get a token for free ice cream at the local Culver's.
Ah. Okay.
For example, one of the questions is, do your listeners know how do butterflies taste their food? The question that, do they taste it through their proboscis, their antennae, their wings, or their feet? But if the participants go to the right station, they'll learn the answer and be able to fill out the quiz. And for your listeners, the right answer is feet. Butterflies taste their food with their feet.
Wow.
We gave it away.
Yeah. Well, we've learned a lot today, but that might be the single most interesting fact we've learned today.
Oh, I hope not. I hope they know more about the refuge.
Well, right. That's important. That's more important, but this was fun. So, yes, this is the Monarch Family Fun Fair coming up this Sunday, August 11th, 12:30 to 4. Again, it'll be at the Main Beach Pavilion in Crystal Lake, and it's a wonderful opportunity to learn a bit more about monarch butterflies, of course, but also to learn more about the Hackmatack National Wildlife Refuge. So is this the kind of thing that people can visit? And if so, what would be the best way for someone to come take a look at the Hackmatack National Wildlife Refuge?
Well, that's always an interesting question, because the refuge is a work in progress.
Right.
For your listeners in Wisconsin, I think probably the best would be the Turner Tract, which is located off of Highway H between Genoa City and Lake Geneva. It's a wonderful, beautiful oak woodland with some restored prairie. There is a trail there. But also your listeners could go to Glacial Park, which is owned by the McHenry County Conservation District. It has wonderful topography, a variety of wetlands, oak savannas, and prairies, much like what we hope to restore as part of Hackmatack National Wildlife Refuge.
Very good. Is there typically signage at these various locations?
There is signage for the four sites that are currently open to the public. There is signage off of Highway H in Wisconsin, off of three other sites, and additional sites have just now been conveyed to the Fish and Wildlife Service, so the signs are in progress, like the refuge is in progress.
Very good. Wonderful. Kaylin, this must make your heart sing to just hear about a project like this.
Yeah, this is really great. I love if everyone could do work like this all over the country and all over the state even, it would just make such a difference. So it's awesome.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, I would just add, too, for your listeners, if they're interested in learning more about Hackmatack National Wildlife Refuge, all they need to do is Google Hackmatack National Wildlife Refuge, and the friends will come right up. You'll get an opportunity to peruse a timeline of our activities, the scheduled events, the stewardship activities. So I wanted to mention that for your listeners. Just Google Friends of Hackmatack National Wildlife Refuge. And then I just wanted to share a quote from Carl Sandburg, who kind of was a guiding light for us. And he said, nothing happens unless first a dream.
Mm.
So the refuge started out as a dream, and now it is a dream realized.
Yeah, that's got to be a fantastic feeling. So we congratulate you and all of your colleagues who have worked so hard on this. Steve Byers, who is chair of the Friends of Hackmatack National Wildlife refuge. And Vince Muska, I so appreciate your contribution to this conversation, representing Hayes and Associates, which is hard at work on much of the restoration of the of this land. And this is just one of a number of projects you have going right now, right?
Yes, we have quite a bit of work. We do a lot of land restoration, but then also we work on subdivisions and soccer fields and those. So that's why it's wonderful to work on a project like this, because it's very rewarding. And it's important, you know, water quality in our waterways is not what it should be. And one of the keys of the restoration of this is the riparian lands for water quality protection for our local waterways. Yeah. There's a lot of agricultural runoff. We all love farmers, but the agricultural fields are hard on our local waterways. So when we do these large-scale restorations like this, there is a noticeable bump in water quality improvement. And so it's very satisfying professionally.
Yeah, to make a difference. Ms. Vince Muska with Hayes & Associates, we thank you also as well for being part of the morning show today.
Thank you.
Kaylin, thank you for arranging this. I know you have a couple of announcements you're going to make at the very end here as we sign off.
Yes, okay. So last month I had mentioned a freshwater fun day happening at the Petrifying Springs Beer Garden. Well, that was rescheduled. That's now coming up on this Monday, August 12th. There's going to be, I actually know some people that are going to be there from Parkside. Some buddies. So just it's an opportunity to go and see some freshwater invertebrates and just look at some critters that are crawling around in our waterways. There is also an open house weekend at River Bend Nature Center in Racine, of course. So that's this Saturday and Sunday, the 10th and the 11th. There's guided nature hikes with their naturalists. You can go on the kayak and the canoes on the Root River. There's going to be some archery demonstrations. So there's more information on River Bend's website, riverbendracine.org. My friends at the Eco Justice Center, they have pacas and pints if you want to go hang out with an alpaca and drink a beer. That's coming up on Thursday, August 22nd from 5 to 8. Those are really, really cool. The cost is $30 and the proceeds go to help support the Eco Justice Center and the animals at the Eco Justice Center. And finally, this is the last time I'll say this year. Tomorrow is a Friday night in the summertime. There is a concert at Hawthorne Hollow. The Empty Bottle Boys and One Shot Jane will be there tomorrow, Friday, August 9th. It starts at 6 p.m. You can get there at 5. It's $10 per person, and bring your own chair.
Fantastic. Kaylin Palomares, good to see you again. We look forward to seeing you next month here on The Morning Show.
Thank you, Greg.
Actually, the Freshwater Fun Day at Petrifying Springs was remade actually last Monday. So that was misinformation from me. So my apologies. Hope many of you were able to get out to enjoy Freshwater Fun Day last Monday. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, a special walking tour of the beautiful new children's library in Kenosha. KPL Kids at the Uptown Lofts. You'll hear that interview tomorrow, and it's also a morning show interview that you can view via our Facebook page and website. That's tomorrow on The Morning Show here on WGTD. Our weather forecast is for Partly sunny skies today and a high of 83 degrees. Partly cloudy overnight and a low of 55. Sunny tomorrow, Friday, and a high of 76 degrees. And those beautiful conditions are expected to continue. Saturday, sunny, 75. Sunday, sunny, 79. Identical forecast on Monday and Tuesday. And all the way into next Wednesday, sunshine and comfortable temperatures. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. And